Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, June 14th. I'm J.E. Skeets back in the Classic Factory with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tassie? Got my top shot hot boy, a man who does not fear the deer, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-yo!
The international man of mystery taking it to the Max Lielis.
Friends.
Lily, and last, certainly not least, making the magic happen here on a Monday, it's J.D.
Hello.
There he is, and here we are. So happy to have you, JD. We didn't think we were going to have you.
Ah, me neither. I raced back here after seeing my man A-Rod. Actually, I didn't see A-Rod. I saw Dr. Butler, the dentist.
Ooh. Everything okay?
No.
Oh. Uh-oh.
I just got pain. They don't know what's going on.
Oh,
no cavities or anything like that. But first time ever, the tap, 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 literally hammering on my teeth. Does this hurt? Ooh. Tat, 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 tat. I'm like, kinda. You're hitting my teeth.
Was it like the hammer Matty O had in the happy hour on Thursday night?
It was very much like that.
Oh, okay.
But here's, hey, Trey, first time ever, I heard the staff referred to Alex Rodriguez as A-Rod.
Oh, my. This is
I've
huge.
I've never heard that before.
Wow,
yeah.
This is big.
Yeah, that we can now definitely openly call him that because we've been pretty silent about it, you know, only doing it live on the internet. But now to be able to say it to his face, to maybe think about turning two together at some point, exciting stuff.
All right. Well, I'm happy you're here, JD, because otherwise we would have broke this thing for sure. But I'm not happy to hear you're in a little bit of pain. But thank you. All right. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live here on a Monday morning on YouTube. Smash that like button. Do it for JD. Do it for A-Rod. Leave your comments and subscribe. Keep sending in your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in if you want, @nodunksinc. That's INC on Twitter. We'll be hitting the beach later this week, usually on a Wednesday, so you got a few days to get your cues and your comments in. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Okay, right into the games. Man, we got some storylines to talk about here. Let's start with the MVP, Jokic. Getting ejected, oh boy, we'll get to that, and then the Suns sweep the Nuggets 125-118. That guy that beat the snot out of that other guy and yelled Suns in four was right, Lily. Oh man, what a clip that was making the rounds. But anyway, again, lots to talk about with this game and this series. How about it, Lily?
Well, that'd be like that guy saying that he was he tried to make a play on the ball when he was whacking those two guys. I don't know. There's something there. But listen, Jokic, look, he commits these frustration fouls. He's done it throughout his career. And when you make contact with a guy's face like he did, I think you have to go because the rule states that if there is unnecessary and excessive contact above the shoulders and also into the face, it's a flagrant two. And there was all of that. And I think it was that super wind-up that really did him in because I don't think you can claim you were making a play on the ball 90 feet from your hoop when your intention is pretty clear. You know, play on the ball is like full court pressure. Maybe you try to poke it free and you maybe commit a cheap foul. And even though, okay, he does slap the ball free, but that comes clearly after the contact with Payne's face. And you can see it's across the sort of nose-mouth area of Payne's face. It's almost like an MMA thing where you sort of see it, you know, ricochet or reverberate down his face there. Mm-hmm. And look, I can understand why Jokic was frustrated. They were probably going to lose this game anyway. They were probably going to get swept. There was an argument saying, look, he's the MVP. It's a closeout game. Maybe he should get some lenience there. But I just don't think that really holds up because he lashed out. He was angry. And you see that slow-mo. He gets the big wind-up like that, and he comes down, and then he's ready to fight the entire team after that as well. So, look, I think it was a silly play from Jokic. I think it was a frustration play. But when you make contact with a guy's head and face like that as he did, I think it's a pretty clear in the rule that it's a flagrant two, and he had to go, and the right call was made.
I do not agree with this. I'm fine with a flagrant one. You're spot on, Lee. He's frustrated. He winds up. Yep, he makes contact, even if it is like his forearm to the nose.
Forearm? That was his bicep.
Bicep. Okay.
Bicep to the nose? This guy got ejected for a flagrant two? Come on, I watched 10 minutes of basketball this weekend, and it was Jokic getting kicked out for hitting a guy with his upper arm. I don't know.
Flagrant one. You don't think it should be a flagrant two. That's
flagrant
my point.
One easily. He didn't even hit him with the part of the arm that he was swiping at the ball with. He was trying to foul him. He said afterwards, I was trying for a hard foul. He got it. That to me should have been a flagrant one, but what do I know? I'm not a ref lover like Lee Ellis over there.
I honestly, I'm the opposite. I watch this over and over myself, and I'm like, you can't just go in there and then claim you were making a play on the ball when you got that big wind-up like that. That's what did it for him. He wasn't going in to make a play on the ball. That's what he and Mike Malone...
I actually think the extracurricular stuff after the actual play probably hurt him too. With him stepping to him, what are you going to do about it and all that.
He got the tech foul for that, but he was ejected for the play on campaign there. And like I say, I mean, he does this where he does these frustration fouls. Often it's a push or it's more of a grab the guy or something like that, which is fine. But when you go in like that, and then again, the Nuggets are all saying, oh, play on the ball, play on the ball. It was not a play on the ball. He got the ball after the contact, but he was going in there to create that contact. And when you get a guy in the face like, and Payne was down too. Now, he did come back and he was fine. But Payne wasn't just on the ground saying, I'm just going to try to milk this to see if I can get him ejected. He got whacked clearly in the face unnecessarily. I think that was the right call.
Taz, what do you think?
It doesn't help the court of public opinion here when you watch the replay over and over and over again, and they just picked the slow-mo replays to show us. So it wasn't even live speed. It was just, all of Jokic's bicep against Campaign's face over and over and over again. And yeah, he went for the ball, but at the same time, it is true that he's not trying to strip him. He is 100 feet away from his hoop. There isn't a play to be made here. It's just, I'm just trying to mess you up here a little bit because I'm really pissed that we're down 3-0. But at the end of the day, when Campaign, he went down, and I think he did, I know it hurt him, but I think he did sell it a bit. And I think that did help, just him lying on the ground until, hey, come on. You can get up now. We got the call. I do appreciate that Nikola Jokic, after he gets tossed, does go up to Campaign and shake his hand and make a nice little gamesmanship play out of it and walked off and said, all right, you know, I messed up. It's over. I would have preferred a flagrant one on the play because, you know, when a guy goes in and drives and you don't make a play on the ball and you just go smack his head, it's a flagrant two. This, at least he was looking for the ball and he did hit the ball. And then he made some nose contact as well. It's unfortunate that it's the biggest guy on the court and also the smallest guy on the court that also does, sell it for the Suns. I would have gone flagrant one, but at the same time, I can totally understand why Jokic was tossed in this game. Again, especially because our cameras are so good. Yeah. Our cameras are so good. So you just see the slow-mo, bang, bang. Every time they showed a replay, they didn't show live speed. I think we all would have looked at it differently if it was just a whack. And I think Campaign would have been looked at as selling it a little bit if it was just a live speed whack as opposed to, 48 minutes of slow-mo.
Well, you guys are saying flagrant one, and the Suns were basically saying the same thing too. The team that got affected here, the player that got hit, they were like, yeah, that was a weird ejection. Probably didn't deserve it. No track record, Lee, of like injuring, maliciously attacking guys. No,
right, but definitely a track record of committing these fouls. No, but he commits these fouls and he's gotten away with it.
There's a lot of guys in the league that commit like frustration.
Him and Westbrook are the only ones who do it regularly like this. This far from their hoop. Other guys commit them, close to the hoop. But that shouldn't make any difference for me because, again, he came in with that big, if he doesn't go in like
you
this.
You don't think it should matter the MVP of the league who has no history of, like, again, trying to injure guys compared to, like, a Beverly if he did this or whatever? Like, They're different. They just are.
But again, that you can't,
because of status because of like of their history.
You can't go and look at replay and then say, okay, but hang on, he's the MVP and this is an elimination game, so we should give him some lenience.
You're telling me they would have kicked LeBron James out if the exact same thing happened?
No point in bringing that up. That's irrelevant to this discussion because we're talking about this here. Who cares what they would have done with LeBron James? In this case, he came in and went far. He crossed the line as to trying to stop the play or make a play.
Well, I disagree with that. He did a dumb foul, hard foul, but did not break the guy's nose, did not hit him in the head first. But
he did hit him in the head first. He got him in the head clearly before he got the ball.
Oh my God, he hits his nose because he's doing a frustration foul.
Is his nose not part of his head?
Oh my God.
Hand is part of the ball, nose is part of the face.
He clearly makes contact.
So are you going to... I can't wait to get to the Nets-Bucks game where I guess Giannis should be suspended for 50 games because he went for a rebound and Kyrie...
You're bringing up things that are
ankle.
Completely irrelevant to this conversation. That's got nothing to do with what Jokic did. Jokic did something and he crossed the line. He was far too aggressive in that play to try to make that play on the ball. It was
way too
aggressive.
That's obviously what the officials thought.
And the Suns didn't care
that he's the MVP and that he's at home in an elimination game. That's an 8-point game.
Nor should they.
Yeah,
nor should they. That's irrelevant.
I disagree with that.
That's completely irrelevant whether or not he's the MVP. So if he came runner-up MVP, we'd be like, well, okay, he was runner-up MVP,
no,
MVP
the point
so
is
we can throw him out.
Yeah, okay.
No,
you don't believe there should ever be anything along the lines of a superstar call even applied to a flagrant foul one or two.
It doesn't make any difference in this call. It doesn't. I mean, who cares if what they would have done with LeBron James? That doesn't make any – that doesn't strengthen your case at all. They're not going to say, hang on, what should we do? Would we kick LeBron out of that? No. Okay, well, we're not going to kick Nikola Jokic out either. That's just silly to me. That doesn't make any sense at all. And the thing is, the Suns were saying, oh, yeah, he shouldn't have been ejected. Of course, they were 3-0 up and they're going to sweep him. I'll bet you if the series is different, they're not going to say that. Are they?
Possible. Well, I like that we wasted 10 minutes on this because they would have lost anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. They were going to lose. And that's where the frustration was born from, the fact that they couldn't really get it close enough. Because Chris Paul was absolutely torching them in that third quarter. I mean, he was just an incredible player in this series. And you could just see the frustration building. They had their shots, the Nuggets.
I get it. I guess my point is there are levels to a frustration foul and a dangerous foul like that. You know, if we go back to Bynum body-checking Barea in the air when they're getting their asses handed to them, like that's a lot more dangerous, even though I guess Campaign was hurt even more than Barea was in that instance, but that shouldn't matter. Whereas this one, I'm with you. A flagrant one. Yeah, you penalize them. Absolutely, the tech for getting into it with Booker. Absolutely fair, but throwing him out—that seems excessive for a guy again that just doesn't. Outside of frustration fouls, he hasn't hammered and punched guys in the nuts or in the face before.
But he did on this occasion. He got him in the face. Yeah. I mean,
he made a mistake. Even though he does commit frustration fouls, this was probably the biggest windup of his career. I would say. I mean, he's got the most pressure on him because he is MVP at this point of his career. He also doesn't have his number two guy in Jamal Murray. I'm not trying to give him an excuse or a reason, but he committed his worst foul, most likely we've ever seen, whether or not he's a nice guy or not. And nothing really did him any favors, especially, you know, if Campaign pops right up, it's a flagrant one, no doubt. That hat played a part. The cameras played a part. There were a lot of factors. You guys just brought up a really, really good question, though, and I can't wait to find out the poll results. Is the nose part of the head? It's going to be 50-50.
Wow, is it part of the head? I guess technically it is. Yes. No, look, he gets him. But, you know, like, if you watch it, it's funny you are bringing up the camera and the slow-mo task, because go back and watch it in real time. Reggie Miller's reaction to this changes about eight different times in the span of 30 seconds. Yeah, he starts by saying,
"Touch him."
Yeah, all ball. He says that right away. All ball. And then it changes. Oh, now I think he's going to be gut. Like, it's pretty funny. But yeah, we get the benefit of seeing the replay after the replay. And now the officials do too. And that maybe makes it seem more excessive. But I just think it should have been a flagrant one, Lee. That's where we disagree. You think they got it right by the letter of the law? You think that's a flagrant two? I disagree on that.
Look, I didn't want him kicked out. But I think he deserved it because of what he did.
That's my hang up. I don't think he deserved it for that play. Yeah. I don't. And if that's the case, that's bad. I mean, that's not that excessive to me. That's anyway,
I think the thing to me is that he didn't slap him in the face. People are like, he slapped him in the face. No, his hand was like 3 feet from his face, but he's taller. He was reaching over him, and no doubt, the windup looked bad. The angry look on his face looked bad. The eyes closed at moment of impact. It all looks bad. And like you're saying, no matter what part of the face or head that you're touching, if you're touching above the shoulders, you're going to get called for a flagrant foul, and it's often going to be a flagrant too. So by the letter of the law, no doubt about it. But I thought he was trying to slap him more so in the chest, more so in the shoulders. I thought he just kind of missed because his arm is a little bit bigger than he anticipated. Should have been a flagrant one in my book, but in the rule book, Lee, you're right. It's a two. And, you know, sometimes that's what happens when you go for the frustration foul. You're a little bit too frustrated, go over the line a little bit too far, but I don't know. Nobody tries to hit somebody in the face with their upper arm.
If Jokic immediately goes to campaign with the, oh, damn, are you okay, like when he goes down, then I don't think he's ejected at all. My point was right off the beginning there, Lee, him not doing that because he's frustrated. So he's like, good, I gotcha. And then Booker stepping to him, and then the whole little melee after that, that hurt his case. I mean, that really did. I think if Jokic right away was like, oh, damn, I didn't mean to hit you in the face, man, then he probably is still in the game, even with a flagrant one. I think that
is. Do you think it influences the referee's decision that the guy's name on the back of his jersey on the ground is Payne?
It's possible. Let's talk about the actual Suns, because they are going on to the Western Conference Finals. And Lee, we'll go back to you here. Chris Paul, amazing. Amazing again. What did he end with? 37 points in this one. 14 and 19 from the floor. All 9 free throws. Don't think he missed a free throw all series long.
He didn't.
He's got a stupid, you know, assist to turnover ratio. And he just sort of iced the game, too. It was a 6-point game with about 3.5 minutes to go. The Nuggets were trying their damnedest to stay alive without Jokic. Of course, no Jamal Murray. But Chris Paul, once again, high pick and roll. He attacked McGee at that point. Porter didn't come over because he's lost out there. Open lane, foul, and one, and I thought that really iced it. But he was awesome. He was awesome all series long, and here he is in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, he finishes with 25 points on 63-75, 100% shooting, 10 assists per game, one turnover, or 1.25 turnovers per game. But the Suns' starters were all incredible. All of them shot over 50%, average in double figures. Devin Booker actually finished 49%, but we'll give him a pass for that. But Chris Paul in that third quarter especially, I think he hit 8 in a row there for the Suns. And every single time. And he's talked about this, saying that you don't even need to look at the hoop if you get to the right spot on the court, where he's made that shot a million times. And you could see that he was not going to give the Nuggets any sort of life in that second quarter, in that second half there. And it was just an incredible play. He actually picked up a tech foul. I don't know if you saw it, and they missed that free throw. And he was shouting out as well, ball don't lie, or Paul don't lie, people were saying, but I think it was more ball don't lie. But he was just in complete and utter command of that game. And the Nuggets had nothing to really do to stop him, because you mentioned, and Reggie pointed this out on the broadcast as well, there was a time where Michael Porter Jr. really was supposed to switch, but he was like, there's no way I'm getting cooked by Chris Paul again. And that basically made Chris Paul just walk into a mid-ranger. So he was absolutely dominant this entire series. Go back to that first game, really, because remember the first 2.5 quarters, the Nuggets played pretty well in Phoenix until Chris Paul took over again there. So they get some great rest now. They're going to get at least, you know, 6 to 8 days off here before they face the winner of the Jazz and the Clippers. Everything is going right. No injuries. Paul is fresh and healthy. You know, I hope he can just stay healthy for the playoffs, because this is just almost like a Dirk-like run for the Mavs 10 years ago.
Yeah, Phoenix trailed once in this game. It was 2-0, and then Devin Booker hit a three, and then they never trailed again to us. It was pretty dominant, and everybody contributing once again. Sort of the same story after a couple of these games, with Phoenix getting contributions from everybody, and attacking Michael Porter Jr. in pick and rolls. I would say attacking Jokic as well, too. I mean, I'm almost fascinated if it is the Jazz that play them, because I want to see the difference a defensive player of the year in Gobert makes to that drop coverage like that Jokic is doing, because I get it. Jokic is not going to be able to hang with Chris Paul and perimeter, but he was dropping, dropping, dropping. And then it was like, that's just the spot where Chris Paul, that's where he makes his money, right there, right around the free throw line. Okay, jumper after jumper after jumper with so much space. But what were your big takeaways from the Suns sweeping him? Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, tough for Jokic to play on the defensive end after having to do everything on the offensive end. Obviously, he missed Jamal Murray a ton in this series just to take some of the offensive pressure on him. are off of him. So yeah, the Suns obviously a great two rounds here, and they've got a little bit of Raptors vibes from the 2019 playoffs because their fans are traveling and coming to visit them on the road post game. Chris Paul did his post-game interview in front of Suns fans in Denver. If you remember 2019, the Raps won the whole thing with fans in the arena in Oakland. It was a beautiful thing. And, you had these vibes here. Garrett Elwood took this great photo of Chris Paul saying hello to all his faithful that stayed after the game to say what's up to him, kind of like our friend Mo Verney in the crowd in Game 6 in Golden State. Did you get those vibes, Lee? Because you were there. You were there for. You didn't go to Game 6, did you?
No, I don't think Mo Verney was there for Game 6. No, I thought he was there for Game 4.
Yeah, I saw Mo, I think, for Game 3 out there.
That's 3.
I had those vibes, obviously. I can't wait to see. Hopefully a healthy Clippers or Jazz team, because it is fair to say, kind of like the Raptors, you know, beating the Warriors in 2019, it is fair to say the Clippers did defeat the Nuggets without Jamal Murray, and in the first round they defeated the Lakers with a half AD, half LeBron, or whatever that was. So I can't wait them to see. Can't wait to watch them against a full strength, hopefully, Jazz or Clippers team.
Who would they rather face, Trey? The Suns right now, they got a couple days to rest. Who do they like their chances against more? I'm sure they feel confident they could beat anybody in the West right now, and anybody in the league, crying for that matter. They won 7 straight postseason games here, but would they prefer the Clips or the Jazz? And you can take into account the injuries, I would say, right now to Conley and Mitchell.
Yeah, I think maybe the Jazz, just because they're going to play defense kind of the same way that the Nuggets are. Like you mentioned, Skeets, Jokic was in major drop mode, and he was dropping way, 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 way too far last night because he was tired, but watching Chris Paul in that third quarter was like looking at a family circus comic, and he was taking like the longest routes possible just to end up at the right elbow to make another jumper. Yeah. And that's what you kind of think maybe could happen against the Jazz as well, right? If Gobert is going to be playing his drop coverage, surely he'll be a little bit higher up on the floor than Jokic was, like Jokic was earlier in this series. But that jumper is still going to be there, and that's an advantage for both Chris Paul and Devin Booker. They can both live in the mid-range for sure, but the Jazz have been pretty solid so far in the playoffs. I don't know, man. That's a tough call. Ayton played so well in this series that I think they would also be fine rolling up against the Clippers, too, because Ayton has been able to really hold it down in the paint, and that's something that's going to cause problems for L.A. if it ends up being Phoenix and L.A. in this next round here.
Yeah, Lee, same question. Who do you think the Suns would rather face here in the conference finals?
Yeah, I'm sort of, after Game 3, leaning back towards the Jazz because of those injury concerns. Mitchell's got a bit of an ankle injury, and Mike Conley still hasn't come back. And you just sort of saw the Clippers. Like, that was a very impressive victory the other night. They attacked hard, they went into the paint, and they were hitting their threes, which obviously makes a big difference. But, yeah, I think with the Jazz, just because it's very hard, because if the Jazz are at full strength, though, they're such a good team at both ends of the floor. And you've got Mitchell, of course, and Mike Conley, who is a good defensive matchup for the backcourt there in Phoenix of Booker and Chris Paul. So it's kind of a little bit more even in that sense. I think Chris Paul would rather go up against Reggie Jackson. But then, you know, Kawhi and Paul George there as well. It really is a toss-up. It doesn't matter for the Suns. I mean, I guess they won't have home court if it is against the Jazz, but if it's against the Clippers, they will, which is going to be, you know, potentially a huge deciding factor in this series. We've seen it, be a factor against the Clippers. They haven't been playing well at home. Of course, they've won their last two there, but other than that, they haven't been great. So it's a toss-up, really. I think it just comes down to health. I mean, when you look at the two teams, I mean, with Kawhi is the best player out of those two teams, and Paul George, when he's playing like he did on Saturday night, he's clearly playoff P. He's much more dominant and impactful player, but he does go missing at times as well. So I guess you would take the Clippers because you do have home court advantage, and they're going to be on this incredible sort of back-to-back schedule where they're only getting a day off in between. So fatigue could be more of a factor for them than it is for the Utah Jazz. So I'd probably go back to the Clippers now. I started with the Jazz, now I'm on the Clippers. I don't know.
You're like Chris Paul in a pick and roll. Jesus, man. I know you're hitting the jumper, but why are you going everywhere on the floor? The narrative, though, is a lot juicier.
Skeets, hold on. Skeets, ask me.
Yeah, Tass, who do you think the Suns would rather face in the conference finals?
I'm going to have to agree with M4GDN1M in the stream team. They probably prefer whoever loses, who's not playing very well.
Interesting.
I'm going to have to go with that. But yeah, home court advantage, obviously number one.
You think so? Okay, yeah. I don't know.
And yeah, the Clippers had a seven-game series in round one. Now, likely, you know, at least six or seven-game series here in round two, playing every second day. That's huge. That's huge. Benefit for the Suns. The Jazz, you know, had some rest in round one. Well, and Donovan Mitchell, he's playing through anything, man. He's going to fight through, no doubt.
Chris Paul against the Clippers.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's spicy. Way more juicy. Yeah, if he could somehow send, like, Ballmer packing, that'd be amazing. Playoff P.
Yeah, I'm workshopping a really dumb take, Skeets. I was thinking about it driving. For most of Chris Paul's career, he's been doing these State Farm commercials where bad stuff happens, right?
Right.
Bad stuff always happens to this guy.
Yeah.
Throughout his NBA career, up through this season. Had some failings in the clutch in the playoffs, we shall say.
Yeah.
The new State Farm commercials, only good things happen for Chris Paul when the insurance agent shows up. Could that change things for Chris Paul in the clutch in the playoffs? Only time will tell. That's why it's a dumb take that I'm still workshopping. We'll see how it goes from here on out, because things are only looking up when Jake shows up now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but he's turning into like a cardboard cutout, and he's turning into a basketball.
He does occasionally turn into things. Like, that's the new spice. Yeah. And they brought back Cliff Paul. He showed up again. He was gone for a long time. But it does seem to be there's less of a sense of dread for Chris Paul in these State Farm commercials now, and I wonder if that has an effect on his psyche in the playoffs. We shall see.
Wow, that's a keep workshopping that, but there's something there. Something definitely there. All right, well, before we move on, TK, something that happened in this series, of course, we need to address.
Yeah, exactly right. Lee cursed my vacation by saying pretty much the very last thing of Friday's podcast. Hey, what if somebody gets a big beef while you're gone on vacation? They're slowing down in the playoffs. It'll never happen. But of course, Nikola Jokic went for 32 points, 10 assists, and a massive 20 rebounds on Friday night. We've said, do big games count if they happen on Fridays? Unfortunately, yes, they do. JD, roll that beautiful beef footage.
Nikola Jokic had 20 rebounds. That's a lot of roast beef.
Hey, Ma! Can we get some
roast beef?
You want some?
Yes!
I knew you'd come. Hey, Mom!
Roast beef! No dunks. We love roast beef, which is rebounds.
Wow.
Perfect. I'm glad he had it so badly now. That made it even better. That's the best one yet.
DIY beef. Didn't take my computer with me, but made some things happen on the phone. And, of course, an assist from Tass. He messaged me, I think it must have been Saturday. Hey, let me know if you need help with that beef. I said, send me the clip of Will Ferrell yelling at his mom for a meatloaf. We got things to talk about here. So, yeah, family production. Got Laura to film me just rebounding out there. Obviously got my mom cooking up the roast beef. Fun times. just boxing out there, trying to get the fundamentals back.
Yeah, that was like, this is when things get weird, baby.
That was like a lost scene from Above the Rim, right? Where, isn't it Leon's playing without a basketball?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, at least he's like taking shots. I suppose you might tipped a couple of them in there, but just a ghost boxing out. That's the next level for the real sickos out there.
Yeah,
I was glad to see that court. That's a really freaking cool court you're playing on there.
Yeah, where were you?
Yeah, that was a pretty, nice. I don't know. It's just that in this random community, we were at a lake house and, you know, there was just a random basketball court. I was like, well, if there's a court with a gigantic puddle on it in the midst of the woods, I better go record some fake rebounds over there. It's just it's my calling in life.
I love thinking of somebody showing up to No Dunks live on YouTube for the first time ever and just came in right before that watching a man grab some you know, fake rebound. And I guess they're real rebounds, but there's no ball, so I don't know what you call them. Anyway, great stuff. I'm also having some Wi-Fi connection problems here. I don't know if I'm breaking in or out, guys, but I'll keep powering through here to our next game. Bucks even their series with the Nets after Kyrie's ankle injury. Who wants to get us started? Tass, what do you think? I mean, I guess the first question, because I saw this going around Twitter. Godly, if you take this angle, I'll be crazy. Was it dirty what Giannis did for Kyrie's ankle injury? Was that dirty? Was that the equivalent of stepping under a guy, Zaza Pachulia, like 25 feet from the basket? What do you think?
Absolutely not. It was not. When Kyrie landed on Giannis's foot, Giannis actually looked back and wondered what the heck happened. If you're doing it on purpose, I don't think you really care that much to look down. Zaza Pachulia wasn't looking at Kawhi Leonard's ankle when he got turned up. It's different than a jump shooter on the outside. I think Giannis, he bolted in there looking for a rebound. It's something that does happen in the key a heck of a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm judging character in this instance. Giannis doesn't want to try and get over this championship hump by trying to injure somebody. I could be a fool in judging Giannis's character, but I think that's absolutely not what the heck he wants to do. So I don't think he went in there with that malicious intent. It was kind of an odd thing because Kyrie was jumping back instead of like jumping forward or even jumping straight up because he was trying to avoid Drew Holiday's contest. And I think Giannis couldn't even see exactly what was going on when he bolted in there. Anyways, yes, he's an incredible athlete. He's not Zaza Pachulia. He could stop anywhere he wants. But this is different. It's totally different. And I can't get behind that. You know, some people I like thought, whoa, Giannis knows how to stop on a dime in any instance. He could have stopped before Kyrie's legs, and he even got to his outside leg. How the heck does that happen? But no, I can't. I can't get behind that. I just don't think. Maybe this is also an instance of seeing 6 billion replays and thinking, wow, everybody's getting injured. I don't know. I don't know where you go with that. It's just one of those things that happen in the lane. It happens a lot.
Nash said the X-ray is taken on Kyrie's ankle negative. So game 5 is uncertain at this point, Lili. But I assume you wanted Giannis tossed and fined $100,000 suspended. No, I'm just kidding. What'd you think of the play? And then we get into this game, though.
It was just an unfortunate play. I mean, he goes in to sort of box out to try to grab the rebound. And, when we see guys on the perimeter, they have the time to slide their foot under. Giannis didn't go in there and think, okay, great, here's a chance. It was a split second thing, and it just happens sometimes when a guy comes down on another guy's ankle. That's all it was. I mean, he was trying to be ready for the rebound, and Kyrie came down. I mean, we can't look at every time someone lands on someone else's foot that it was intentional. Sometimes it is, but in this case, it wasn't. And it's funny because if you look at the play, I didn't even see Kyrie go down at first. You sort of have to look back because Mike Breen brings it to your attention as well. It's like, oh, yeah, he is down. So, and then when you see the replay, it's an awful twist of his ankle. But
it goes down low.
Oh, yeah. And he was down for a while, and he was saying apparently to the trainers, don't touch it, it was hurting. Mm-hmm. But then you do see him sort of limping off there. So that's hopefully a positive sign, and the MRI also saying, that there's no major damage there. But, this happens sometimes in basketball. We've all rolled our ankles a million times because when you're in the paint, especially, you jump up and there's a lot of bodies there, there's a lot of feet there. If you come down on one, it's so easy to do. So I really don't think there's anything there. Certainly no. He didn't have time, Giannis, to sort of be like, great, here's my chance to finally get Kyrie. It was just a play that happened and an unfortunate one for the Nets.
TK, you wear ankle braces. You've had some ankle injuries in years past. What did you make of this?
I hate it. I hate falling on an ankle like that. It makes your ankle hurt when you see somebody else sprain an ankle like that. It looked like an unfortunate circumstance to me, Giannis was just coming over to challenge the shot, maybe sort of rebound in the lane. He was just making his presence felt in the lane. He got up a little too close into Kyrie, and Kyrie landed on his foot. Unfortunately, there are feet there, especially underneath the rim. I don't think that was a dirty play, but I suppose if you're a Nets fan, you're saying, hey, why is Giannis boxing out Kyrie Irving when he's in the air already? Which I think maybe could be a fair argument. I don't think he got into him enough for it to be dirty, but I don't know. They said Kyrie was in a walking boot afterwards, right? So that does not seem to be indicative that he will be ready for game five. And if that's the case, it feels like the Bucks have a lot of momentum going into that game five.
Yeah, let's get into that. I mean, this is a 2-2 series here now, Tass. I thought PJ Tucker was awesome here in game four. I know the Nets think he got away with a lot of physicality with Kevin Durant, right? Sort of from the jump of this game, he like got physical. That's what he does. And, you know, they weren't going to call everything. And that sort of maybe affected Durant a little bit in this one. But he was also hitting the corner three. Tucker was giving them something offensively. He hit 3 of 6 there from the corner. And prior to that game, I mean, the Nets were basically ignoring Tucker. They were like, all right. You know, they'd have their his defender, like, shade off, help make that wall versus Giannis, get more eyes on him, and he was going to make him pay in this one, and I think that's big. And Middleton hit timely buckets. He had 19. Drew Holiday, I thought, had another brutal offensive game. He is struggling on that end, but 14 in the end. Tucker, 13, like I said, and then Forbes hit 10. This was a bit more of a balanced effort around Giannis with his 30-plus. Are the Bucks in control? Like, if there's no Harden still, and there's no account or no reports that he's playing in Game 5, I mean, I guess Kyrie could, you know, it could bounce back in 48 hours and maybe he plays on a bum ankle. I sort of doubt that. Like, are the Bucks going to win this thing? Am I going to somehow take $100 from you and feel really dirty about it? Because this is pretty rough here for the Nets.
I think the Nets win game five, whether or not they have Harden or Kyrie in the lineup. And either is definitely not guaranteed. But the Nets offense was very predictable in the second half with Kevin Durant as the number 1, 2, and 3 option. The Bucks knew it was coming. They were able to load up on him. But a couple things I think are in the Nets' favor. Kevin Durant has had 2 bad games in a row, and he's too good for that. This is the best offensive player of my era, that's for sure. One of the best players of all time. He shot 9 of 25 in this game, 1 of 8 from 3. I think they just sort of get it together. I think the second half was a good little trial to figure out how we're going to play without Kyrie Irving and James Harden if they don't play in Game 5. Joe Harris also had his second bad game in a row. I think the home court definitely bodes a lot better for their role players, especially if they figure out how to play around Kevin Durant a little bit. The Bucks should feel good, but they only just took care of business at home. Of course, we didn't expect that after a 50-point loss in Game 2. But the Nets have home court advantage. I think that's very key. The Durant sat out the last 4.5 minutes of this game because they're ready for Game 5, I think. And Kevin Durant, the bad part is for him, he has to do so much in this series on the defensive end because he's operating a lot like a 5, and he's being their the rim deterrent, and he's got to do so much offensively. I think, you know, this team has been a really good team all year. They go back to the drawing board, and whether or not everyone out there thinks that, oh, this is just a superstar heavy team, no, they operate as a unit, and they're going to go back and make sure they all operate a lot better around Kevin Durant. And this is a team that, you know, only really gets it going when their backs are against the wall. And now their backs are against the wall in a way, now that they're 2-2. We all know that, yeah, they play defensive possessions enough for one quarter to win games. And they're up, double digits in this game in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. I think now that they go back home, I think they'll figure it out. And I just thought it was a horrendous offensive game. I just can't see Kevin Durant doing it again. We talk about Kyrie Irving down. There was the play where Pat Connaughton was down as well, and he was all bloodied up on one end of the floor. So the Nets go to the other end. They're up. They're on a 5-on-4. They got the power play. And Blake Griffin was wide open, but he kept giving it to Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant just passed it back. You're open. It's 5-on-4. Do something with it. I just think they clean those types of things up. They're just not – they're too good. They're too talented. They've been too much of a team to go out like this. So I think they figure it out. And they were horrible defensively too, allowing so many three-pointers wide open on the other end. So backs against the wall, I think the Nets believe.
Man, I'm not so sure with both of those guys if they don't play in Game 5. They're 2 stars in Kyrie. That's a lot for KD to do, though. I guess if anybody could, he could easily put up a 40 or 50 piece. I think he's going to have to be officiated a little differently because I think Tucker wisely he's physical with them, and that's the way to do it. And KD, he does not go seeking really fouls lately. You can't say that about him. He doesn't try and flail. He's got the classic, the rip move, which I feel like you don't even see as much from him as we used to. But anyway, you know, he's not really the whining type, if we're being honest. So it might just come down to how they're officiating it, and maybe like the Nets coaching team there trying to get in the officials' ears right from the jump. Hey, like, look what he's doing. He's holding, he's grabbing. You can't do that. But we'll see. I'll say good news for the Nets. You know, Jeff Green is back, so that helps a little bit. Task maybe, you know, as another big defensively trying to take charges on Giannis and stuff like that. But the bad news is Milwaukee shot, they shot a lot of threes. They only shot 16 of 47. That's like, what, 34%. They're better than that. They can be. They were garbage in the first three games, 20 of 88 from three in those first three games. I still think they have a game in them where they hit a ton. They hit their 20-plus, which, you know, again, is bad news maybe if you're the Nets. It could happen on the road. Well, it just sucks this series suddenly if both of those guys are out. I don't know how you could be happy with that outcome, even if, I guess you're a Bucks fan. You're like, well, dem's the breaks, TK. It's like, sorry, buddy. As a sort of a neutral fan here, even if we got a little money riding on it, I don't want to see this. Nobody wants to see this.
Of course not. Injuries suck for everybody that experiences them in all fan bases, and you want to play against the best competition out there. But also, if you're the Bucks, you're like, okay, now we actually have the advantage in star power. Yeah. That's pretty crazy to think. They just won a game ugly in Milwaukee. Two teams scoring less than 90 points, won that one. They won a game sort of pretty here in game four, making 16 three-pointers after making just 20 in the first three games. Like you said, Skeets, mm-hmm. I think they can still hit a 20 spot too. Yeah. Heading forward here, and they have had some success against the Nets defensively, held them under 100 both of these past two games. You don't expect that from the Nets, and I don't know exactly how Kevin Durant is going to approach this, because he's going to have to dominate the game, and he's going to have to come out looking to score a whole bunch of points, looking to almost put up a 40 spot. Meanwhile, the Bucks, a great defensive team, are going to be ready for that because they know exactly what's coming. So they'll do their wall building. They'll let PJ Tucker do his thing. They'll have Giannis being able to help a little bit more at the rim. They got big old Brook Lopez out there, giving him a little more than I thought he was going to be able to in this series. Jeff Green is going to be instrumental for the Nets because you assume he's going to get some open shots. And Joe Harris simply has to be better. He can't be shooting like 10% from three when you're one of the best three-point shooters in the game. Maybe it just comes down to who makes the most threes for the rest of this series. That seems to be the case in a lot of NBA games these days. The Bucks trending upwards. People were ready to have them buried after the 0-2 start. Some were still ready to bury them after they won game three. And now we're already hearing, oh man, how are they going to be able to deal with Embiid in the next round? Wow, guys. Flippity floppity flop flippiters. We still got a long series here. Everybody thought this one was going to go long. Why would it not go seven at this point?
Yeah, okay, let's put a pin in that series for now, because we got tomorrow's show where we can like really look ahead to that game five, which I believe, Tass, correct me if I'm wrong, is tomorrow night. That's a Tuesday night. It'll be just one game on. Yeah, Tuesday night there, just that one. But we got some other series we got to break down here. But we also got to take a break to hear from our sponsors, Lili.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast, that would make me so happy. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything, really. It really is. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, if that's a 10-minute low-impact class, they got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear, you know, a 30-minute live DJ ride. DJ John Michael, that guy plays the hits. He always gets me going. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's get to the other series here. We will go to the Jazz Clippers series. We had Kawhi and Paul George helping the Clips beat Utah, cutting that deficit to 2-1. Game four tonight here on a Monday. Tass, this game happened on Saturday. We got to go back a little bit. But what was your big takeaway from game three and then this series as we go ahead?
Well, like in round one, I think the Clippers took a couple games to find out their rotation, to figure out how they're going to play the superstar on the other team and Luka in the first round. They've kind of figured that out with Donovan Mitchell a little bit. If I were to tell you the Clippers allowed 19 threes in game three, you'd think, oh, they lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lost a game where they gave up 20 threes earlier in the series. But I think they figured it out. They're not going to let anyone beat them at the rim. They're just not going to do that. They have found a way to be a little buzzsaw in the lane, to have everybody sort of switching on the perimeter. And as soon as people get into the lane, they stop them. They're doing a really good job of that. They've gone small. They figured out their rotation. Zubats is back to the bench. And just like against Luka, I think they've figured out how they can do it. Now, they are doing a good job on Donovan Mitchell because Donovan Mitchell, as soon as he turns his back, as soon as he does his little spin, Kawhi Leonard is there, baby. He's there to swoop in for a double to try and get him. So I think there's no way to really guard Donovan Mitchell, but they're forcing him to shoot threes. They're blitzing him when they can. And now, kind of like the first round, everybody contributing at the offensive end too. It's one of those situations where you got nine guys who can all shoot. Their bench now, it's Zubats in those limited minutes. It's Beverly, it's Mann, and it's Kennard. And Marcus Morris found his flow. Kawhi found his flow. Paul George found his flow. Everybody is flowing. And now we got a series. So play small. Figure out a way to blitz Donovan Mitchell when you can. And the rotation is good. And Kawhi Leonard is back to his full self. And so is Paul George. So I think they're just playing at a Clipper level. It's not like you can really just point out one thing with this Clippers team. Just like in the Mavs series, we only really appreciated everybody until they got it done. And I think they're just doing it by committee. They're just a great team right now. It's something you don't really think about when you think Clippers basketball, and it's kind of boring to analyze. I just bored myself for a minute and a half. But at the same time, that's how you win games. Mm-hmm. They're doing it by committee. Everybody in the rotation knows their job.
What do you think, Lele, from this Saturday night dominant victory? And then I know we had the Mitchell sort of ankle injury scare there.
It was dominant, and that's the most impressive part about it. They put up 132 points on the Utah Jazz, who are an outstanding defensive team. And Paul George and Kawhi, they're two stars, clearly with the best players. But Reggie Jackson has been giving them really good offense in the last couple of games here. You know, hitting those three, stepping in, and just giving them a little bit of a breather so it's not all on Kawhi and Paul to generate everything. Reggie comes down, and he calls his own number, and he takes that shot, and he knocks it in. So that's good. And again, I think, as Tass is saying there, Ty Lue has kind of decided, these are the guys I'm rolling with, and that's basically it. And he has made some changes there with Zubats. It's like, you're going to get a handful of minutes, but if you're not contributing, you've got a pretty quick hook because they do need to go small. So this series is alive. I mean, the Jazz started off this game actually quite well. I think they were out 8-0, and it sort of looked like, man, well, how are the Clippers going to respond? But after that point, then the Jazz were in control of this, and it was Donovan Mitchell again sort of carrying the offensive load. You know, Joe Ingles hit some threes, and Clarkson gave them some energy off the bench. But the Clippers had this game pretty much for the most of the three quarters in their command, and then they just pulled away in the fourth quarter. So it's a huge game tonight here for the Clippers. If they can win this one, I think this series is absolutely still alive. And full credit to LA, because, you know, going back to that last series, I was like, if this team's behind, they just don't fight back. And now they've done it two series in a row, and they get a chance tonight to tie it up. So I'm really interested to see how the Jazz respond tonight, because it's obviously not a must-win. They're still in control. Even if they lose, they still have home court advantage and all that. But they got drilled in Game 3. They really did. I thought one of the most impressive games from the Clippers we've seen this postseason.
Yeah, you said, Tass, if you had told somebody, oh, the Jazz hit 19 threes, but they still lose the game, you'd be shocked. True, for sure. Clippers did hit 19 threes too, so that helped, and they shot a better percentage, 19 of 36, 52% from three. Now, maybe that shouldn't be surprising, TK, because they were the best three-point shooting team in NBA history. They do have a lot of guys. Paul George is one of these classic, like, he just has games where he does not look all that important, like a superstar-type player. He just disappears. You're like, okay. Like, even if he finishes with, like, his 20-8-5, you're like, what impact did he have on the game? But then you get these Paul George games where, especially when he has that three going, I think is such a game changer for him. He hits 4, 5, 6 in this one in game three, and it's just a huge momentum shift type of shot maker, and just opens up even more guys to knock down threes, like Kennard and Batum hit a couple. So what's your take on this series now? Do you even have a prediction for game four here tonight? I know some of it depends a little bit on Mitchell's health, but what do you think?
Tell me if this is true. They say hitting is contagious in baseball. Is shooting contagious in basketball? Maybe, because that's kind of what it feels like for the Clippers. This was the first, or just the fifth time since they've been together, that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George both went for 30 points in a basketball game. Plus, their role players hit another 12 threes if you subtract the 7 from Paul George and Kawhi there. So, I like what Ty Lue said after the game. He said, I don't go to the steakhouse to order ketchup. I go to order steak, which I mean bars, first off. But second off, you're exactly right. Your stars have to play like steak in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Your stars have to sizzle in the postseason, and they did. Because once they're flowing, that opens things up for everybody else. Because Kawhi is the guy who's going to get it done in the interior for the most part, I feel like, for the Clippers. And then if Paul George is able to add his support on the perimeter, that's huge. Then the three-pointers start dropping. The Jazz have to figure out a way to take away one of those three things. You can give up 30 to Paul George. You can give up 30 to Kawhi Leonard. But you can't have 12 threes for these other guys. Mm-hmm. You can give up 12 threes to these other guys, but you better limit Paul George. You got to take away something. And the Jazz have been great at taking away something for the past 5 seasons. So you would have to imagine that their defense is going to be a little bit better in game 4, but the Clippers can really shoot the ball. And when the ball is really fizzing for them, that's when they get their best looks. That's why they've had so much success moving Nick Batum to starting center. A weird concept, but it's been working for him, getting those shots up. I don't know. Not having Mitchell at full strength would be terrible for the Jazz. I don't think that's going to be the case. He said he would have come back if the game was a little bit closer. No, Conley is obviously affecting Utah, just not being able to have him as a defender, as a ball mover on the other side. I don't know. Maybe the Clippers have figured something out. You can't blow a lead if you don't have a lead. Playing from behind with their backs against the wall has worked out for them so far in this postseason. You would have to think with the way Game 3 went that they are probably going to be the favorites in Game 4, but the Jazz have another level to get to. Yeah. We've just seen them be one of the best teams in the postseason up until basically Game 3, so I don't know. I expect that Game 4 shall be tight. Give me the Clips, I suppose.
I don't think this is a hot take by any mean or hot prediction, but I think whoever wins tonight's Game 4 wins the series. I think that's where I'll go with this one. If the Clippers tie it up 2-2, I like their chances to actually still win in 6 or 7. And if the Jazz go up 3-1, I don't see the Clippers coming back from that deficit, because the Jazz are a damn good team. But tonight's game, obviously, pivotally, if you want to call it that. Yeah, I don't know if Magic tweeted that. Yeah,
yeah. It is in a weird way, though, even though the Jazz can lose and still be favorite to win. But it just felt like, you know, because they didn't just smoke the Clippers in the first two games. The Clippers battled pretty well, and the Jazz outlasted them and won those games. But Game 3 in LA, that was the most convincing victory, I think, of the series, because the Clippers just were dominant, and they're going to stay with their small ball because that's their, they feel, their best way of beating the Jazz. And a couple of times, you know, you see Rudy does get dragged out. That's what they're trying to do. You know, he shouldn't come out when Patrick Beverley's on the three-point line. That's when he has to stay at home there and let him shoot. But that's clearly what the Jazz's MO is in this series. And it's like, if they can win tonight, then yeah, this series is definitely alive as long as Mike Conley stays out. If he comes back, then I think the Jazz will be fine. But no sign of him yet. The same, a bit like James Harden. No real idea of exactly when those guys will be back.
Yeah, they've done a good job, the Clippers have, of making sure they're watching Donovan Mitchell, staying home at Bojan Bogdanovic, and deciding, Joe Ingles, you want to beat us? Go right ahead. Royce O'Neal, you want to beat us? Go right ahead. Rudy Gobert, you want to beat us? Go right ahead. Those are the guys that they're allowing to try and beat them. So when Mike Conley went and whispered to Donovan Mitchell at the end of game three there on the bench, when Mitchell decided, I'm chilling for the rest of the game, the injury could be playing a part. Also, I don't think we're coming back. Yeah. I mean, I think that those two dudes, they're scheming, they're planning. I'd like to see them both back for game four, because I think the Clippers have kind of figured out who they're going to allow to score, and Mike Conley reinserted into that lineup would be monstrous for them, setting up Gobert, making him more of a threat, and scoring, obviously. And Donovan Mitchell, this was a quote-unquote bad game for him, as bad as it could get, dropping 30 points. He was only 11 of 24, but it was worst game of the series because he is that great right now. And so I think he'll be even a little bit more assertive or a little smarter. He took some Damian Lillard-type deep threes in this one that clanked. And he can't turn his back on the Clippers right now. So he's got to make an adjustment. And hopefully those two dudes were scheming for game four. Hopefully we see them both back tonight.
Final series we need to touch on here. We'll do it sort of briefly because it happened on Friday night and game four happens tonight. But Embiid and the 76ers, they took care of the Hawks 127-111. So they are up 2-1 in their series lead. Danny Green is going to be out here for what, 2 to 3 weeks, I believe they're saying. So that's a tough blow for the Sixers. Or is it? Because their bench was awesome in game three for Ken Korkmaz, was fantastic. The entire bench combined for 48 points on 17 of 28 shooting. Embiid, still unstoppable, Lee. We were down there. A few of us were at the Fortress there. And it was like one of those games, you know, where it just like any time the Hawks would like make one or two baskets in a row or get one or two stops, you're like, this is when it has to happen. This is when the momentum maybe shifts. And the Sixers always put an end to it. Every single time. A lot of it through Embiid. A lot of it through Simmons, especially in the second half, who I thought was fantastic. Like playing with some, you know, some pace and some power and just like operating through him. And they just had an answer every time. And it's like not looking good here for the Hawks. Chances of you know, winning this series, maybe even keeping it close. I don't know. I just don't see how they stop these guys, Embiid. And then Simmons, when he plays like that, it's like, what's the answer here, man?
Yeah, deflating loss there for the Hawks, because it just felt it felt like they were just way too small. Ben Simmons, you know, the 6'10 point guard who was posting up and then just feeding Embiid inside, or just attacking Trae Young, whoever it was. He only took 11 shots in the game, Ben Simmons. Finished with 18 points and only 7 assists. It actually felt like he had way more assists than that, but he just seemed to, every time he had the ball on the offensive end, he did something. They scored, they got a good shot, their three-pointers were falling when Furkan came off the bench, Seth Curry hit a couple. Tobias Harris was secretly very, very good also in this game. They just got contributions from everyone. And even a couple of times you saw Tobias Harris kind of on Trae Young, another bigger, longer, stronger guy. And that just made it a little bit more difficult for Trae Young to get into his flow. You know, his numbers were fine, what he finished with, 28 points and 8 assists. But it did not feel like he had much of an impact on this game at all. But none of the Hawks really did, I didn't think. I didn't think anyone was sort of in that moment where it was like they can sort of do this. I don't think it got closer than 8 to 10 points either. And the Hawks, you know, Gallinari had a wide open three that he clanked. They sort of had chances, but it was like, even when they did, it felt like the Sixers then would rattle off 3 or 4 straight baskets in a row and they had this game. So yeah, this is a massive game for the Hawks tonight because they're staring at a douchey. We didn't think that was probably going to be the way it was going to be after game one. The Hawks were looking great. I really think they figured it out. But then I think Doc Rivers has also realized, like, okay, Danny Green, no one's happy that a guy's injured, but they've got the personnel that can replace him. You know, Thybulle fouled out of this game, but I'm not sure if he starts him. I guess he probably does in tonight's game, but clearly, if you can get in Trae Young's face and just make life difficult for him, it makes life difficult for the entire Hawks offense. And I think what they finished with 110 or something like that. But this game was not close. The Sixers won this in a romp, even though the margin was only 16 at the end. It was never even really that close.
Yeah, Tass, like I said, some of us were down there. We were hanging out with some Hawks bros, and even they were like sort of saying, hey, at least we beat the Knicks. You know, they were still riding that wave of like, you know, we had Trae Young quieting the MSG crowd. I mean, I don't want to say they've given up on their Hawks. I would never say that about the Hawks bros. But it does, even I could feel from them, it's like, I don't think we can slow, especially Embiid, let alone some of these other guys. Embiid just goes to the line time and time again. And they're like, I mean, they're fouls because he's a monster. It's like, what are you going to do? He went to the line 16 times in game three. He's been to the line like 25% of his offensive possessions in this playoffs. Like, that's a crazy amount, but it makes sense when you're a guy and everybody's like, just go inside, man, go inside, they can't stop you. Doesn't look good for the Hawks.
But he had a quiet 27 in this one. I mean, that was quiet for him. Yeah, they definitely can't stop him. They decided to double. I just want to, you know, watch a team that obviously had a new game plan. Hey, we're going to double Embiid, get it out of his hands. But then at the other end, I don't know if the lights are a little too bright for this young Hawks team, but they just didn't know who they were on the other end, really. I didn't think that those guys stepped up offensively enough. And Ben Simmons, yeah, put his foot down in one quarter, had, you know, that 11-point third quarter, and that was that. I mean, the Hawks had no life in them. I thought the most entertaining part of the game for me was I was at the bar getting a drink, and there was a man with a sort of a small suitcase, I'd call it. I don't know, it was a large handbag full of cash that he was paying for drinks with. And everybody around us was really enjoying that. That's Atlanta, baby. So that was happening. You know, the crowd cheered a little bit, and the Sixers were a little pissed off that this happened, that they cheered when Embiid went down with an injury. He was limping. You know, I was trying to shush the crowd. Flashbacks to the Raptors fans cheering when Kevin Durant went down in game five of the 2019 finals. Fans do that. It's unfortunate, but fans do that. And that's the only way this series is turning, it feels like. Because just the Hawks, they showed absolutely no life. And it is unfortunate what happened. I think it really is. Even for the Hawks bros, the lights are a little too bright. I mean, I think that's just part of it. They just weren't in a flow. And yeah, the Hawks bros took me back again to the Raptors, 2001. They're extremely excited that they won in Madison Square Garden in round one, just like the Raptors did in 2001 in game five when Alvin Williams hit that shot. I was jiving with the Hawks bros on that one. Yeah, man, that's it. You're going to win round one, and that's about it. Been there, done that. But, I thought we saw game one, what happened. They just couldn't recoup or regroup, I guess, from the Sixers giving it to them in game two. They just weren't able to, and it's unlikely, right, that they do that in game four here. The Sixers have every ounce of momentum right now.
Embiid, 39-9 in game one, Trey. Followed that up with 40-13 in game two. And then, yeah, a quiet 27-9, 8 assists.
Talk to me about those 8 assists. Yeah,
and 3 blocks in game three. And I think if Ben Simmons is on Trae Young in game one of this series, this might be a sweep, if I'm being completely honest. But we're here, and the Hawks, you know, they could hit a million threes tonight, and who knows what Trae does. It could be 2-2, it could be a best of three. I just think it's unlikely with the way Embiid's operating, Trae.
Well, the Hawks don't have anybody to guard the Sixers' three best players, and that's going to be a problem because Embiid can score every single time he gets the ball, or they double him and then they get a good shot from Tobias Harris. Like you said, Trae Young doesn't really stand a chance against Ben Simmons when he's engaged and aggressive trying to score inside. The Sixers are a really good basketball team, and they got taken off guard, I think, in round one. They had a pretty easy first round series against the Wizards, whereas the Hawks came in playing hype off that Knicks series, came out, hit a ton of threes in game one, got the win. That's the recipe for the Hawks getting another win in this series, is hitting 18 to 23s so that you can kind of outmath the Philadelphia 76ers. But this series is over. It's just a matter of if it'll be 5 or 6 games, depending on how hot the Hawks are shooting.
We've got Tweet of the Night still. We'll look ahead to tonight's games, but one more break to hear from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at Fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, this Tweet of the Night actually comes from a couple days ago, and I saw it, and I loved it, and I thought this would be a great question for the guys here of No Dunks and for everybody in the stream team and everybody watching a little bit later and listening later. Well, I guess you sort of got to see the photo. So come watch us on YouTube. At Jeff Eisenband. Who's the first player you think of? And then he attached the NBA on NBC logo. Let's call it from the 90s. It's a great question. Like, who is the first player, TK, that comes to mind when you see this old NBA on NBC logo? And by the way, you're allowed to say John Tesh if you want.
Oh, basketball! Come on, Skeets. Of course, when you see this image, you instantly hear the music with it, right?
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing to me. The tweet does say, who's the first player you think of? Because John Tesh, high on my list, not a player. Marv Albert, yep. High on my list, not a player. Ahmad Rashad, very high on my yep. list, also not a basketball player. So first player I think of, gotta be MJ. Michael Jordan, of course. I believe NBA and NBC took over for the 91 finals, which was the first time the Bulls were in the finals, their first finals win. NBA on NBC did all of their finals appearances, but also MJ for Magic Johnson, who appeared in the first finals in 1991 and then was on the call for the finals in 1992. And I will never forget him. Anytime Michael Jordan would start having a great game in the finals, it's Michael's game. It's Michael's game. Oh, it's Michael's game. Who would have guessed that 30 years later, we would be reading his tweets?
Wow.
Pretty much the same. It's Michael's game. It's Steph's game. So yeah. MJ for me, player-wise.
Yeah, okay. MJ's a great answer. I'm sure a lot of people, I see people in the stream team saying him. There are a couple other names popping up, but Lili, where do you go?
It was like, for me, I was like, man, everyone just pops into my head.
Okay.
But the first player really is Patrick Ewing for some reason. I think that's probably tied with the Marv being in New York as well and Ahmad Rashad being the sideline reporter. And that was the name that sort of popped out before even a Michael or a Magic or even a Charles Barkley for me. So Patrick Ewing, big sweaty Patrick Ewing in Madison Square Garden there. I think that just is where my mind first went to. So that's it for me.
Okay. Tass, any other players to add to this list for that NBA on NBC logo?
Yeah, I kind of think Magic and Michael at the exact same time. I just think, yeah. Premium 90s basketball, and I kind of go like 88, 89 basketball. I think Showtime Lakers, I think MJ, that's what I think of. Then I think of Matt Geiger.
Wow.
Why? I don't know. But he pops in there. He's scheming. Yeah, every team back then needed a very large white man playing the five. And so, yeah, I don't know why. He just pops in. Oh, yeah, he's on the team too. But yeah, those, and you know, Hannah Storm, you know, I think of the whole crew mm-hmm. as well every Saturday morning, just hanging. And then I automatically think, basketball, you can't. I played it the other day on the couch. Danielle doesn't usually smile at anything that comes through my phone, you know, that just happens to blurt out of my phone. But then she's like, what's that? And she giggled and we watched
it. Oh, wow.
Good couple minutes on the couch together.
A lot of people in the stream team saying a Reggie Miller for mm-hmm. sure in the mix because of those iconic battles in MSG. You're right, Lee. It's, you know, of course, Jordan, Magic, I get that. But yeah, I think I immediately go to MSG the Madison Square Garden with the Marv angle there and then the players. So either be it the Bulls versus the Knicks or the Pacers versus the Knicks, like those series. That's where I go. But everybody's
all those iconic Knicks losses in the Garden that Marv's on the call for.
Ouch, ouch.
Beautiful 66 degree evening.
people are throwing out the stream team. What do we got? Carl Malone. Yeah, that makes some sense there, playing in some finals. There's a LaPhonso Ellis.
Wow.
Okay. Scott Skiles. I see a Penny. Spike. Okay. Not a player. Detlef Schrempf. People are saying that. Not a lot of Western Conference teams. Mm. Yeah, we said Magic and the Lakers, Barkley and the Suns, but.
Hakeem?
Yeah. How could you not? For sure.
Detlef Schrempf tweeted yesterday when Jokic got tossed, did not like the call.
Oh.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Flagrant one. NBA.
Let's get him on to argue with Leo for 10 minutes.
But, hey, Tassie, you know, you're talking about Matt Geiger, and then you were talking about the Raptors' first victory against the New York Knicks, and then that second round in 2001, they played the Philadelphia 76ers. We got the throwback Allen Iverson in the Hawks Pro section on Friday night there.
There were some Sixers fans there. Actually, were not a lot, I would say, in the arena. Yeah. But you saw some, of course, Embiid jerseys and some Iverson jerseys. We had one in particular standing in front of us who was, look, he was quite vocal, but he didn't cross any lines, I would
say.
No,
he didn't. No. But I think he was wearing a kid's jersey, though. I think it was a kid's jersey. It was...
Wasn't very big. I mean, why is that surprising?
Yeah, I know, but he was, you know, like, you'd rather have an oversized adult's jersey, wouldn't you, than a kid's jersey, because you're that small?
I don't think so. I'd rather you be able to wear your actual jersey.
I don't know.
That was a bootleg, not bootleg, but a throwback. He got that at a vintage store. It was quite faded, or maybe he had it forever. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a crappy jersey for sure. It was a replica.
Yeah,
it was, you know,
that's what I meant.
Something, total bootleg, but, kudos to him. We're in the standing room section, and he was boxing out.
He did hold his ground, that's for sure.
I don't think he left. What a conundrum. I mean, the conundrum on Friday was, how old is this
kid? Yeah, that was the weird part.
He was drinking alcohol. Is the nose part of the face? Is this kid old enough to drink alcohol? Are you 21?
He was on the border. Right on the border.
I think he was just 21. He was living his good life. Hey, Sixers were dominant there. You got the victory. Well, are you going
is
back?
Is this true? What? Is this true that a kid's jersey makes you look jacked? Did this guy look jacked in the game?
No, he looked like a kid. He looked like a kid. Hence, he was wearing a kid's jersey. I don't understand this take from Ellis, I gotta say. Are you going down tonight, Lili, for game four?
I don't think so.
Wow. Nah. He's already given up on his heart.
I'll save it for game six when they come back.
Okay.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see. Pivotal games there tonight. Sixers at Hawks, game four. 7:30, they're saying, start on TNT.
Oh.
We'll see. Jazz Clippers at 10 is the second game tonight. So we'll have two games four to talk about on tomorrow's show. Let's start wrapping this up now. Shout out to everybody joining us here in the stream team. Thank you so much. Smash that like button if you haven't already, and make sure you've subscribed to No Dunks on YouTube. Send in your questions for this Beach Steppin podcast this week. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com, or you can tweet them in at No Dunks Inc. That's INC. And finally, go grab your No Dunks merch over at NoDunks.com. And get yourself an Athletic subscription. Go to TheAthletic.com/NoDunks if you haven't done that already. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, sometimes even people who are extremely meticulous about their teeth, like JD, get teeth problems. It's true. Genetics. It's crazy. You can brush, you can floss, and it doesn't matter sometimes.
Feel better, JD. Are you there still?
I'm here.
Embrace the day, people.
You could stay every day, and I'd be happy every minute.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.